Welcome to the Sailor Noob Podcast, where a superfan and a noob talk about the original Sailor Moon episode by episode. I'm your host, Mikan Hana, joined by my co-host.
I'm Caliban, the co-host and the noob, and it's a time for healing.
And we're a couple of magical people ready to moon crystal power make up this episode. Sailor Noob is brought to you by the magnificent cries of a homesick child.
That is so magnificent.
Yeah, well, her cries are pretty magnificent.
Sometimes I go down to the apple cellar just to hear the cry. What you said was creepy.
Okay. Well, I mean, is it magical? I don't know.
This child cry.
Yeah, okay. I'm not saying you want to hear this child cry. I'm just saying they're powerful, these cries.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So that kind of magnificent.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Uh-huh. Looks like synonym.com let you down that time.
Don't be mean.
You're right. I shouldn't be mean. It's a time for healing.
Yeah. So let's heal. What are we healing?
Well, I was just thinking the other day that, you know, I've been gatekeeping myself when it comes to anime. I never wanted to speak up. I never wanted to be labeled as an anime fan. Not because I was embarrassed by it, but because I felt like I hadn't seen everything. Mm-hmm. Like when I'd go to a con and I'd see people dressed up as, you know, something that I now know is JoJo's Bizarre Adventure or something like that.
Sure.
I'd be like, oh, I don't know. It'd be like not liking baseball because you don't know all the stats. You don't know, you know, how many home runs Roger Maris got in 63.
Mm-hmm.
I do know how many, but bad example. But so I'm just sort of like, yeah, that's just, you know, yeah, I like a show. I like this. I like that.
It's
like, no, we've watched like 20 animes that I had never watched before. Well, less than 20, because some of them are Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z.
Right.
But, and then, we're doing this show, and I'm realizing I'm an anime fan.
Yeah.
Just because I haven't seen everything, that just means that I have the opportunity to see more stuff.
Embrace it.
And so, you know, I want to magnificently celebrate that realization I've had, but I want to make sure that anybody else knows that if they feel the same way, like, they're just like, well, you know, I've just watched Sailor Moon when I was growing up or something, but I don't remember. Like, no, you are an anime fan. You like an anime.
Yeah.
And, you know, it might behoove you to try some other anime out if you haven't. I mean,
absolutely,
we're preaching to the choir here.
Yeah.
The giant-eyed, sword-wielding choir. But, you know, if anybody gets anything out of that statement of mine.
No, I think that's good.
Welcome.
Don't be embarrassed. And
I am going to be embarrassed.
Oh,
because someday I'm going to be on a panel at a con for this show, and they're going to be talking about, you know, something that happened in Hunter x Hunter or something, and I'll be like, well, I don't know anything about that. I'm like the noob for everything, not just sailors.
Well, you know, I mean, there is that, and I felt for a long time like, am I really an anime? Like, well, I'm a 90s anime fan. No, I'm an anime fan because, like, it's like I knew a lot of shows from the 90s and I feel like I haven't caught up because...
Well, they're just remaking them all now.
Well, there is that. There is a big wave of that for sure. Definitely.
Yeah.
Well, today we are talking about episode number 64. Ginzu Sho o Moto Mete Chibiusa no Himitsu. In Japanese, In Search of the Silver Crystal, Chibiusa's Secret, the English translation, and the English title, Trouble Comes Thundering Down.
Thundering Down.
Yeah.
That's a good title. I'll have to try to top that. But that's my job.
Well, their English title for when Jupiter came was Jupiter Comes Thundering In.
I take back what I said. They're
just
not very good at this.
Something blues.
Yep, that's why we did it in the first place.
Yep.
Good to remember why you're doing it.
Would you like to give us a synopsis of this episode?
Yeah, I'm going to try. Not exactly sure what happens in this episode, but I do know that we start with the bad guys in the Rainbow Room, where the Ayakashi sisters are just hanging out. No rabbit to kill, no droids to boss around. They're just taking a day.
Mm-hmm.
Each of them are in front of one of the mirrors. They're doing their makeup, taking stock. They're touring the facility and picking up slack. The green-haired one, Let's call her Countess Highbeams. She puts on a dark purple or like a black lipstick and she says, "What do you think? I'm bringing the color of the dead into fashion this summer." Awesome. Berthier says, "Black is the color of darkness in funerals. It's the color sprinkled with taint." Yeah.
I don't know how I feel about that.
Over in the corner, Turnt Sienna says, "I'll bewitch the men with this ribbon." But Cohen says, "Gold is too glaring, Big Sis Calaveras, and your mascara is too thick." Calaveras? Who wrote this? Mark Twain? Calaveras means skull in Spanish.
Well, not skull.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It means a representation of a skull.
Mm-hmm.
And it generally applies to, like, you know, the sugar skulls they give out on, like, the Day of the Dead and stuff like that.
Okay.
But it could also mean a memento mori, which they probably just say in Spanish, memento mori. It's Latin. But which is a representation of death. It reminds you that, you know, death is in your future, that sort of thing. And the main character of the video game, Grim Fandango, his name is Manny Calaveras.
Oh, okay.
Because he is a walking sugar skull, basically.
Sure, sure. Well, we'll get to her name is, again, based off of a mineral, like her sister's. And we'll get to that when...
It's a skull. I just told you.
Well,
well,
but...
we'll hear that later.
Yes.
I also wanted to mention that Mark Twain wrote one of the first Western isekai stories with a Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's court. Just saying.
Nice.
I'm just saying.
That's cool. Yeah.
Remember when that Yankee went back to King Arthur's court? And he's like, "Bark it off! These swords are way too small. How do I use my... Where's Merlin? I gotta use my magic powers." It's an isekai.
Right, right.
Calaveras doesn't like this. She doesn't like this criticism. And she says, "Watch your mouth, Cone. You're the youngest. And what's up with your bodysuit in this hot weather? Is your skin irritated?" Cone immediately loses it over this. She's very sensitive. Maybe her skin is messed up. I don't know. She's like, "You're so mean!" But before the Avon party from hell can continue, Rubaeus shows up and says, "All right, knock it off. We have no time to waste talking fashion, so no comments on my vest, no shirt with pleated forest green pants combo, okay? I got a plan to draw the rabbit out. The rabbit hates thunder." Okay?
Yeah.
And Highbeams is like, "Yeah, yeah. If there's lightning and thunder, the rabbit will release her energy." And Ruby's like, "That's right."
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad they know what's going on.
Yeah.
She says, "I got just the droid for this. Leave it to pets." Mm-hmm. And walks out.
Yep.
Pets.
Yep.
Pets.
Mm-hmm.
I want to buy chew toys from her. Pets?
Yes.
What about legs akimbo? What about fast fashy?
No.
What about Brataporte?
I don't even get that one. We'll talk pets? About yeah. We'll talk about her name again, based off of a mineral. So yeah.
Isn't that like a Pixar film? No, I think it's like a DreamWorks. In Tokyo, a large thundercloud forms near Tokyo Tower and Pets, jeez, appears. She calls forth Furaiki. She's like a rocker chick droid.
Furaiki.
What is it? Furaiki.
Yeah.
Furaiki.
Yes.
A rocker chick droid with a bass drum. She's got like a Joan Osborne thing going on if Joan Osborne was a robot zombie. Pets, look up, ask your parents who Joan Osborne was. Pets tells her, "Light up Juban with thunder and lightning." And she does. She hits her drum and the storm begins. And oh, yeah, she's got a hairdryer that blows wind, too. So that's a thing.
I know.
To keep her look fresh. On the street, we see Usagi running, trying to get out of the rain. She's carrying a copy of Nakayoshi, which is the monthly shoujo manga magazine that Sailor Moon ran in.
Correct.
So very meta, people.
Yeah, they like sticking themselves in there
I guess
lot.
They do.
Yeah.
She's pretty freaked out by the thunder and lightning, but she gets home, tries to dry off. She calls for her mom, but Luna appears. What if Luna was like making dinner because mom wasn't there? There's a little cat apron on her. A little chef's hat.
I like that.
Your mom's not here.
It's rainbow food again. I hope that's okay.
Just dumps it in the bowl.
Yeah.
Remember, at breakfast, your mom said that she'd be shopping with her friends tonight. And Usagi's like, "No! Luna, get me a taolu. Taolu."
Yep.
And she turns to the camera and says, "This is how a real drenching beauty looks. Get it?" No.
No.
No, I don't.
No, we don't.
I don't get it. And Luna's like, "Meta gags, fourth wall breaks. What is this, a John Landis movie?" Get your rain
now
gear.
Now that's a reference I understand.
Get your rain gear and get your butt to the elementary school. Chibiusa isn't back from the swimming class yet. Just then there's a huge thunderclap. And Usagi's like, "Ay, ay, ay."
Yeah.
"No way. I hate thunder."
Uh-huh.
At Juban Municipal Elementary School, the side gate, the sign says, Thanks. Parents are picking up their kids. At least some of them are. Chibi and two other kids are still waiting for their parents. Another huge thunderclap happens, and the kids are scared. Where's the supervisor? Where's the supervision?
That's what I was wondering, too. Yeah.
Teacher's like, 6 o'clock. Anyway, the kids are crying, but Chibi says, stay strong. And one of the kids' moms shows up, so now it's just Chibi and a little boy. And Luna P. Chibi tells the kid, you're a boy, aren't you? Don't cry. Whoa, Chibi.
I know.
To propagate toxic masculinity. Yeah. The kid's dad shows up to take him to cram school. He's six.
Well, but we talked about that. You can be in cram school and elementary school, like to get into elementary school. Like in kindergarten, you could be in cram school.
Ugh. No, that you crawl it outside the lines and this rabbit. Right. Do it again.
Yeah.
Anyway, Chibi's all alone, and maybe she's about to cry. But she's a girl, so it's okay. And a mom and her kid walk by, and the kid says, "Since it's raining, can I get a tadpole?" What?
Kid logic?
What?
I don't know.
Chibi says to herself, Mom, Dad. And we flash to her childhood. This is about like 2 weeks ago. And we see her playing happily in the rain. And a faceless couple looks after her. We can't see their faces there. It's an umbrella. And this hits her hard. She's just a lonely, scared girl sitting on a stoop, terrifying Luna P face staring menacingly at her. Suddenly she freaks out. She just cuts and runs. Somewhere else on the street, Usagi is in a slicker. She's rushing to the school. She's saying to herself, Mr. Lightning, Mr. Thunder, please don't flash and rumble. And in Japanese, she addresses Kuwabara-chan. Kuwabara is the word for mulberry field. And there is a Chinese legend that mulberry trees, check out this Kirokira mirror, mulberry trees don't get struck by lightning.
Really?
Or it might refer to the legend of a Japanese aristocrat called Sugawara no Michizane from a town called Kurabara, who could throw lightning, I guess. And
what?
So saying Kurabara implied that the ground that you were standing on was part of the town. So he wouldn't like, no own team kills. You
okay.
Know, he wouldn't strike you.
Nice.
So yeah,
right,
it's like let's say knock on wood, you know.
Sure.
Well, Usagi is not on Kurabara because there's another huge strike and she goes tearing off. She gets to the school, but Chibi is not there. Usagi calls home where Shingo is playing a Sailor Moon video game.
I know.
Where Sailor Moon is like fighting like the queen alien from
Aliens. That's what it looks like.
at Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, I don't know.
Shingo says he doesn't know where Chibi is and he hangs up. Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
She runs back out into the street and runs into Mamoru, who's just walking around with an umbrella.
Yeah.
She said, maybe he gets like these pre-tingle warnings when he's like, you know, should I start a bath? And be like, well, no, I think there's about an hour or two, there's going to be trouble. So, you know, he gets the dry cleaning bag and just starts walking around outside.
Yeah.
She says, we got to find Chibiusa. And a huge thunderclap drives her into his arms. We hold on that for a bit. We get a Mamo-chan and an Usako. But Mamo pulls away.
Yeah.
Saying, I already told you, I don't want to go out anymore, but I will help you find Chibiusa. Let's go!
Mm-hmm.
Usagi thinks, Mamo's such a good person, even if he doesn't like me. I love him. I love him.
I know.
In a cafe across the street, I guess? There's a weird, like, there's one street corner, there's one intersection in Tokyo in this episode. In a cafe across the street, we see Makoto and Ami having a snack. And looking at Usagi and Mamoru through the window, while Mako's having a snack, Ami's studying.
Mm-hmm.
And Mako says, I thought they were fighting, but they seem to be getting along well.
Mm-hmm.
And Ami says, well, she should be studying. This has been going on a lot.
They're really harping on her.
Yeah.
I know she's like a big study nerd, but this is like an ongoing joke for this season.
Yeah, I have an issue. Yeah. In comes Monaco and Ray.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Side Story Cafe. We're not in the main story. Pull up a chair.
Yeah.
Monaco says, wow, coincidences are crazy. I guess we think alike. And Ray says, except for Usagi, she's good for nothing. Right, everybody? Right? Right?
Side Story Cafe!
On the street, Chibiusa is cowering in an alley, and another mom and child walk by, and this time the kid's like, I'm hungry. And the mom's like, oh, I'll make you pancakes. Fine, whatever. What?
I know.
It's just like unaccompanied mothers and sons just walking around the streets.
I know.
Just to stick it to Chibiusa.
And she's like, they pan down from the cafe, and she's like underneath the cafe, so she's cowering right underneath.
Yes,
where the girls are.
Yes, that becomes explicit in a little bit.
Yeah.
Chibi pushes the nose of Luna P and one of its eyes becomes a screen. Mm-hmm. And Chibi says, Pooh. This is a name.
P-U-U.
Pooh.
Yeah.
I want to go back where mom is. What? But Pooh says, you have to be strong. Your key was like, she's like talking through a screen.
Right.
Your key will let you travel through time, but you must use it thoughtfully. And Chibi says, but I want to go home. And Pooh says, I know it's tough, but we need the silver crystal to save your mom. Just hang in there. Okay, bye. Another huge lightning bolt hits, and Chibi freaks out and says, I'm going home. And she grabs the key around her neck, and lines or cracks start showing up everywhere, like in the air, all over.
Yeah.
Inside Story Cafe, the girls see them, and they're like, what the hell? And everything goes white, and once the light fades, everyone is floating around the cafe like they're weightless. Ami is like, it seems like we've lost the Earth's gravity. So thanks for that. Chibi is floating too, in a supermarket, I guess, because there's like fruit all over the place.
Yeah.
And she's sad that it didn't work. And again, she cries so hard, a beam of light shoots into the sky.
Yes.
Pets sees this from across town and thinks, I found her. And she sends Furikiki.
Furiki.
And she sends Furiki after Chibi. Flies into the market and starts beating a drum.
Yeah.
She's shooting lightning at Chibi. Usagi runs into the market and immediately starts floating. So I guess like it's just here. It's not on the street. This building, there's no gravity.
Just in this one area, yeah.
We cut to the other girls and they're like, Chibiusa. So I guess the Side Story Cafe was in the supermarket or on like the second floor of the supermarket?
On the second floor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is an important building for this episode. Anyway, they're all together. The girls see the droid come in, but before they can act, she blows them away with her hairdryer. Usagi, floating as she is, transforms into Sailor Moon, which she's floating anyway in her transformation, so no big deal, I guess.
Yeah.
And she says, you're responsible for the rain and thunder. Here's what's scary. Earthquakes, thunder, fire, and droids. Those things.
Yeah.
How dare you terrorize a small town and scare children? In the name of the moon, I'll punish you. When she does this, she's like braced with her legs in the doorway. So she's kind of in a stance. She's sort of like, you know,
Yeah.
But immediately, Fura blows her back into a wall. And Chibi says, who are you? Am I insane or has Chibi not actually met Sailor Moon yet?
She has not.
I guess she hasn't.
No.
Okay. Mm-mm. Well, we're going to fix that this episode.
Yeah.
Sailor Moon's having some trouble here. Fura totally electrocutes her and then she starts building up. Doing this big charge. She's savoring it. She's ready for the killing blow. When a rose flies through her drum, electrocuting her.
Yes.
She wears rubber shoes. Tuxedo Mask is also braced in a second story window.
Of course. He says,
the drum is a percussion instrument. Okay. It can touch people's hearts, but you use it as a weapon. You're a musical disgrace. Don't you love him when he comes in and he just mask explains everything to you?
I know. I do kind of like that he calls her a musical disgrace. Though.
I see you're wearing pants. They hide our ding-dongs from everybody.
I wear them too.
Yes. I mean, you don't have to say something every time.
I think he does.
Just get a joke book or something.
I'm scared of that.
Tuxedo Mask throws four roses at Fura, pushing her back, and tails Sailor Moon, now! And we get an MPH, and Fura is out of the band.
Yes.
She actually flies out of the window when she dies, and her gem flies across the street, and it's caught by Pets.
I know.
Who's standing on the roof of the adjacent building.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we'll see Fura again, the reunion tour. Berthier appears and says, aw, it looks like you failed. Now what? And Pets says, well, I'm not going in there to fight. There's no gravity in there. I'm out of here.
Yeah.
Tuxedo says, great work, Sailor Moon. And as he touches down on the floor, he slips on a Pringles can. So not so cool now, eh, Mamo?
I know.
Everybody's wondering what's going on. But Chibi says, sorry, that's my bad. And she uses the key to restore gravity with comedic results.
Mm-hmm.
Chibi says, I just wanted to go home. And Usagi says, if you tell us, we'll help you. And as she's talking, Chibi kind of hears Usagi, but she also hears the voice of Pooh.
Yeah,
telling her to hang on.
Yeah.
Hang on in that world. Stay there. It's important. Chibi seems close to saying something, but Tuxedo Mask says, hey, leave her alone. If the kid doesn't want to say, she doesn't want to say.
Yeah.
And Chibi's like, yeah, thanks, Tuxedo Mask. She runs over and hugs him.
Uh-huh.
And Usagi's like, great. Well, I gotta get the answer to that.
I know.
On the street, Tuxedo Mask in full uniform and Chibi are walking hand in hand as she sings a song about cool Tuxedo Mask.
Uh-huh.
And the girls are all there in their street clothes. So that's it. No more of this nonsense about who knows what. Everybody must know everybody else's secret identity by now. I'm yeah. saying that, like, the Mamoru tuxedo mask, Luna P, Chibi, everybody, we all know there's none of this stuff where with the Bob Floyd episode where she's like, oh, what's going on? Oh, don't worry about it, kid. Like, everybody knows everybody is a superhero now.
No.
How is that possible still? What did they all just go, hey, thanks, we'll see you around. And like five women who are responsible for this child left. Mm-hmm. And then they all came back in their street clothes. And mm-hmm. they're like, oh, thank God, you random man in a top hat, you found her.
He transformed into tuxedo mask before he appeared in the store. So Chibiusa did not see him transform. So she does not know that Mamoru is tuxedo mask.
Okay, fine. But I don't really care. He only shows up in the third act.
The Senshi, the four Senshi that are besides Usagi did not transform in this episode at all. So she's only seen them in their street clothes this episode. The only person who transformed
but
in front of her...
isn't she going to, like, quiz Usagi on why she is a superhero?
She doesn't know that Usagi is a superhero.
She saw her transform.
No, she did not.
Well, she was looking the other way?
Yeah.
That's she so was dumb. Like, that's so dumb. That would not pass any... That wouldn't pass an Image Comics sniff test.
She, like... Because otherwise she would have made a bigger deal about Usagi being Sailor Moon.
Well, they
she
made
was like, who are you? She was like, who is this?
Right, but then the person... Okay, so then Sailor Moon, a girl that looks exactly like Usagi Tsukino,
yes,
leaves and comes back
and is like,
oh, you found her. Thanks. Great. You black-suited dandy.
Yeah.
And also, like, sure, okay, so there's four civilian girls who are also there as well, who are involved in it and are all talking to Tuxedo Mask and talking to Sailor Moon like they know she is. And then Usagi comes back as herself and is like, hey, these are my four friends that you know because you lived with one of them because her mom is an absent mom. And she offered her bedroom to you.
Yeah, right.
So at this point, I know that she's a child, but questions will be asked, right?
I don't know. Right. I don't know how to answer you in a satisfying way.
Okay, all right. All right. Okay.
I understand your frustration.
And all right.
I understand your frustration. But yes.
It's been a long road.
I know.
Anyway, Usagi is a little mad that Chibi is hugging Mamoru, but she guesses it's all right. Because mm-hmm. now Chibi's in love with two men. See what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
But who Usagi is in love with as well?
Right.
She's double dogging her. they see a beautiful rainbow, and that's the end.
Yeah.
Thank God.
Yeah. Any other questions, lingering questions about this episode or thoughts?
So we've talked about in the past, you've made it clear that children escort themselves places.
A lot of times, yeah.
And it's one thing when there is such a reliable, efficient transportation system.
Sure.
And also you probably live, 20 blocks away or something like that. Mm-hmm. A lot of urban living. Mm-hmm. But when I think about how much my parents had to ferry me around everywhere to do stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very alien to me.
Sure. Yeah.
Just thinking about the fact that that child was supposed to walk home from her swimming lessons, like, on her own. And now she's not here.
Well.
And how immediately, you would call the cops in America. And this is more just, I guess we gotta go over there.
Yeah, no, I see what you're saying. And it's I don't know, maybe you tell me what you think. Was Chibiusa supposed to walk home from swimming on her own and then didn't because there was a thunderstorm? Or was Usagi, because her mom told her she was going to be out, supposed to pick her up?
Could be either.
It's just not very clear.
It's still minors escorting minors.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. Usagi's like 14, but yeah.
Yeah, she's a real responsible 14. I don't know. It's just, it's a cultural thing, but it just made me think of all the band practices and all the everythings that my poor mom had to come get me from. Speaking of kids, this is even worse than what I was complaining about before with, you've got the entire world will be destroyed if Beryl gets her hands on the Silver Crystal. So you, 14-year-old girl, get out there. kill people. Do it.
Mm-hmm.
Now we've got like a six-year-old. All right, six-year-old, we're all counting on you.
I know.
Don't send a kid to do an adult's job.
Well, so this is like the weird, one of the weird things for me. If you will give me this for just, I will say one little thing. In the manga, it was Chibiusa's idea to come to where the silver crystal is.
I wanted to jump off the roof because I thought I could fly when I was six.
Yeah.
That was my idea.
And she didn't
tell. But people said, no, don't do that.
I know, but she didn't tell anybody and did it completely on her own. This is not the case in the anime. And yeah,
who's
so,
this Pooh?
Yeah, I know. Who do you think Pooh is?
Pooh stinks.
Okay, I walked right into that one. I did want to say a little thing about the wordplay that doesn't really translate very well. The joke that Usagi makes.
Oh, the drenched beauty?
The real drenching beauty. I would recommend not looking that up because you're not going to find a whole lot. And then sometimes
don't look that up.
Further down, you're going to find links that are like, do you want porn? And you're like, oh, dear God.
Really?
Yes. So I'm like, oh.
That's pretty polite and direct, though.
Well, I
do
mean,
you want porn?
It wasn't like.
It's not like, here are those stamps you ordered.
It wasn't like, do you want porn? It was like, here's some real okay. drenching beauty.
I thought
beauty.
We'd found like the real polite porn.
Polite porn. Excuse me.
If you want it. If you don't, that's fine.
That's fine.
Have a good day.
Send it back. but so this most likely is a play on the word bishonore, which means wet to the skin. And something else like bishoujo, which we've talked about before, means beautiful young girl. So b is like the part of the word b is can be like beautiful. I think we've talked about that before. So it's something like that.
Yeah.
But I've listened to it a couple of times, and my Japanese is just not strong enough for me to even totally decipher exactly what she is saying specifically. So this is something that just doesn't translate.
I think. That was a pretty good answer.
All right. Okay. Well, there you go.
Who discovered that?
You did.
I sure did.
Is it sticker time?
You were stumped.
I know.
But I remembered that you told me about how much Japanese like wordplay.
They love wordplay.
And
they do.
I guess it's not a pun, but it's kind
well,
of a...
Well, it's a play on words.
Yeah, it's a play on words, yeah. Which is a wordplay.
Yeah.
So it's sticker time.
All right. Do you hear that? Wonderful ASRM, the crinkling.
Okay, so I'm ready to pull out the sticker. I've got it.
Oh my God, what'd you get?
It's an Usagi.
Oh.
Tsukino.
Okay.
It is Usagi Tsukino doing the Oshiyakyo pose, and it's Sailor Moon Crystal, I believe.
Yes, very nice.
It's round.
Yes.
And there are roses. Around the edges.
Beautiful roses.
And I think it says, I can't read it on my glasses. Yeah, it says, the moonlight will punish you.
Okay.
It'll punish you. For love and justice, the pretty sailor soldier. Yes.
That's a lot for that size of a sticker. A lot of words on there.
My compliments to the printer. Backtracking is back for an all-new season. Hi, I'm Caliban.
And I'm Gooey Fame.
And we'd like to introduce you to Backtracking, the podcast that explores the real-world inspirations behind your favorite episodes of Star Trek.
From historical events to classical literature to blockbuster films, we go where no pod has gone before to seek out the origins of classic Trek tales.
Did you know, Gooey, that the TNG episode Too Short a Season was an allegory for the Iran-Contra affair?
Yeah, only sweatier. Did you know that the Enterprise episode Regeneration was an homage to the John Carpenter film The Thing?
Archer and T'Pol freezing to death over a bottle of whiskey would have been a controversial ending.
As a dog lover, Archer would not like The Thing, I'm guessing.
Oh my God, movie night is canceled. Join us every other Thursday for a journey back to the beginnings of the Trek universe.
Backtracking is available wherever you get your podcasts.
No, Porthos!
For Kyoro, Kyoro Miro, we're curiously looking around where we talk about elements of Japanese culture within the episode. Today, we are going to talk about weather in Japan. As we have mentioned previously on the show, most areas in Japan experience four distinct seasons. And Japan being a very long and narrow country that is made up of several islands experiences some weather extremes.
Yeah.
And, you know, very different weather from the north to the south. And the southernmost island of Okinawa is tropical and relatively warm all year round. And the northernmost island of Hokkaido does get a lot of snow, which I think we talked a little bit about when we talked about skiing. Sapporo, which is the capital of Hokkaido, is one of the world's snowiest cities. And
what prove it? By foot or what?
By inches, okay, yes. Yeah. And the average snowfall is 191 inches annually.
That sounds like a lot.
It's a lot. There's not snow all year round in Hokkaido, though, and summers can get as warm as 97 degrees Fahrenheit. So, you know, don't get the idea that it's like, you know, living in Antarctica or anything like that. It's not like that. But and I will mention, too, that even though they get a lot of snow, it doesn't necessarily get especially cold. Like, there are places in the northern United States that have, on average, lower temperatures than Hokkaido. Like, I think from what I saw, at least Sapporo, and I'm not exactly sure where exactly it's located, but it doesn't seem like on average, and this is average, granted, that they get below zero for Fahrenheit.
Mm-hmm.
So, not terribly cold necessarily, temperature-wise, but I'm sure they get a lot of wind and a lot of snow. During May to September, the vast majority of Japan is hot and humid, with heavy rainfall occurring across the islands in June and July, except for Hokkaido. The rainy season in Japan starts in June and goes until mid-late July. The rainy season, or tsuyu in Japanese, which can also be pronounced bayu, literally means plum rain.
Huh.
The term plum rain was a Chinese term for the rain in the fourth and fifth lunar month, and that's going off of the Chinese lunar calendar, which typically starts sometime in February. So the fourth and fifth month of that calendar would be May or June.
Okay.
Yeah. It especially refers to the historical belief that when the plums turn yellow and fall at the south of the Yangtze River in the fourth and fifth months, the moisture that evaporates from the plant turns into rain.
Okay.
So,
that's in a way.
That's where it comes from. And I think the reason why it has even like that kind of plum rain is referred to plum rain even in Japan is this rainy season is something that happens in this part of the world. So it happens in East Asia, and it's commonly called plum rain, and it's precipitation that's persistent stationary front known as the Meiyu front for nearly 2 months during the late spring and early summer in East Asia between mainland China, Taiwan, Korea, and Japan. Mm-hmm. So all of those countries are affected by this. The wet season ends during the summer when the subtropical ridge becomes strong enough to push this front north of the region. This weather system can produce heavy rainfall and flooding.
Okay.
The high humidity in the air during this season, and it is really muggy, encourages the formation of mold and rot, not only on food, but on fabrics as well, clothing, you name it. So the heavy amount of rain also potentially floods areas or creates mudslides. The average humidity in Tokyo in June, keep in mind, Tokyo is almost the midway point. It's kind of like a little bit higher than the midway point of Honshu.
Yeah.
Midway in the country, a little bit north, is the humidity in June is 75%. and it goes up to 77% in July. That's the average. But the humidity feels so much more oppressive than that. You cannot help but sweat through your clothes. A lot of Japanese people carry a small towel with them to wipe the sweat off of their faces during the summer months. This is something that I quickly adopted when I was there, and it can help make the heat more bearable. This is really embarrassing, but I unfortunately do not know what these small towels are called. And I have tried to look the name up multiple times, and my sister and I just call them sweat rags. But that is purely as like an inside joke type thing. I wouldn't call them that. But they are so handy, and they're made out of terry cloth and are about the size of a washcloth. They come in many different colors, patterns, and designs, and are readily available at Dapato or Japanese department stores in the summer months. And they work so well that I actually still use them during the summer. Big thumbs up for me. The most rain in a 1 hour period as recorded in Japan was in Nagasaki in 1982, and it was 153 millimeters, which is about 6 inches, and that's in 1 hour. The highest overall recorded rainfall during rainy season in Japan was in 2003, when Miyazaki Prefecture recorded rains of 8,670 millimeters, or around 341 inches.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
The average annual rainfall in Japan ranges from 1,016 millimeters, which is 40 inches, to 2,540 millimeters, which is 100 inches.
Okay. Jeez, 100 inches.
By comparison, I mean, that's annually, but still an average. But by comparison, the average annual rainfall in the U.S., not including Alaska or Hawaii, is 767 millimeters, or 30.21 inches. Mm-hmm. Significantly lower. In Okinawa, the tsuyu season begins in early May and goes through mid-June. In Hokkaido, there is no pronounced tsuyu season because the tsuyu front usually diminishes before it reaches the region so that it cannot create a large amount of rainfall. So Hokkaido does not typically experience a rainy season at all.
Huh.
This period is generally avoided for tourism. It is typically recommended to not plan your trip to Japan during this time. But, you know, because like if it's going to rain a lot, it's not necessarily great. But some sites are considered particularly atmospheric in the rain and fog, particularly mountain areas where there's forests, notably sacred sites and pilgrimage routes in the Kii mountain range, including Mount Koya, which is located in the Kii Peninsula on the main island of Honshu.
We had to go during Instagram filter season.
Yeah, right. Well, that's kind of it, right? And it's eastern coast. Some people just feel like, oh, the colors are more brilliant, or, you know, that sort of thing. So it's like a good time to go out in nature. Another thing is because there tend to be less tourists during this time, tourist areas tend to be less crowded. And also if it's raining, sometimes that's a good time to go to a very usually typically popular tourist area because there aren't as many people there. It is important to mention that during tsuyu, it does not rain daily. In Tokyo, the probability of rain is 45% during the peak of rainy season, while the probability of sunny weather is 27%. For the rainy days, about half see only light rain. So not like torrential downpour the entire time. A benefit of tsuyu is that the heavy rains encourage the blooming of a lot of flowers. Ajisai, or hydrangea, which is considered a symbol of Japan's rainy tsuyu, as this is when they bloom and they need a lot of rainfall to do so. And supposedly they look especially gorgeous in the rain with water droplets on them, and it just brings out their colors. That's what I've been told. Also, there's a particular kind of iris known as Hana Shobu, which is a Japanese water iris that that blooms during Tsuyu. And you will find in a lot of gardens and featured throughout Japan. There are several parks and temples that are especially known for being great spots to admire hydrangea. There are even hydrangea festivals in June in Japan, the most popular of which in Tokyo is Bunkyo Ajisai Matsuri, that features around 20 different varieties of 3,000 ajisai in Hakusan Shrine and Hakusan Park in Bunkyo Ward, Tokyo. The Matsuri also has special events as well as vendors selling food and local wares. Japan has, because of course, has a lot of products that you can purchase to help you get through the muggy summer months. there are cooling wipes that also wipe away sweat. You can typically find them with either the face or body variety, the latter of which typically contain more menthol and supposedly cool you down even more.
Hold on a minute.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
What do you want, regular wipes or menthol wipes?
Well, like face wipes, which don't have as much menthol because maybe you don't want
that. Everybody much. Smells like somebody's grandma.
Yeah, I don't know.
Chain-smoking grandma.
Well, if you don't want to smell like a chain-smoking grandma, another option to help you beat the humidity is a cooling spray. These sprays are available in small portable cans and are applied over your clothing. They cool you immediately and come in refreshing scents to cover up any offensive odors.
Wait, what?
Yes.
Oh, man. I don't want to sweat through this. I know. I'll just make it all wet. It's like if you pee your pants and then you jump in the pool.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
I want to smell like lemons. Get this all over me.
And it's all natural, I'm sure.
I'm sure it is. No. Shakes head in podcasts. Yeah. No.
Yeah. Chemicals.
Yes. Another thing to note is typically Japanese air conditioner units for homes, besides providing air conditioning, have a dehumidifier function. This is typically labeled on the remote as, quote, dry mode. Just like a conventional dehumidifier, this dry mode will rapidly draw humidity out of the air and have a great cooling effect on the room. So, you know, there's a lot of attention paid to trying to prevent mold and mildew in homes throughout Japan as well.
Plus, it's like, they have, you know, ranch houses like anybody else, I guess.
Yeah. But
it's a lot of natural materials and stuff.
A lot of wood.
And so, you know, if you live in the South in America, you just have cedar siding and you can just wash your house. But yeah, if you've got like a lot of straw things around or wood outside of the house, at some point, you know, we talked about the planned obsolescence of houses. Maybe that factors in where it's like, well, this house has had a good run, but it's time for a new house.
I read something somewhere. This was a while ago when doing research on something. I'm not sure what. But women used to do their hairstyles like back in Edo period or maybe even before. Like, and they would keep those same like style for like weeks or days or what have you, you know, and they had like these little pillows that were their wood and you rest your neck on so you don't mess up your hair. I know geisha especially did this, but I think regular women did this as well. But I read somewhere that it used to be a really big problem that people were concerned about because of the humidity. It was still around, you know, back then. They would get mold in their hair.
Oh, man. I thought that's where you were going.
Yeah.
Oh.
Isn't that disgusting? I can't even imagine.
What do you do?
I don't know. See, like, I read this a long time ago, so I don't know what you do.
You just mix some Clorox into your bear grease or whatever and
all right.
Hope for the best. Wow.
Yeah. So you just got to be careful. May through October is typhoon season in Japan.
Good.
Yeah, with the peak being August through October. The term typhoon is the regional name in the Northwest Pacific for a severe or mature tropical cyclone, whereas hurricane is the regional term in the Northeast Pacific and Northern Atlantic. Elsewhere, this is called a tropical cyclone, severe tropical cyclone, or severe cyclonic storm.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't know that. So it's more or less the same thing or very similar to a hurricane.
Yeah.
A typhoon consists of powerful wind up to around 200 kilometers an hour or 125 miles per hour, a rise of the sea level, and heavy rainfall. So typically 30 typhoons form annually over the Northwest Pacific Ocean. An average of about 7 or 8 move over Okinawa Prefecture specifically, and about 3 hit the Japanese main islands, specifically Kyushu and Shikoku, which are the southern two most main islands. But any region of Japan can be affected by typhoons or typhoon weather. Typhoon later in the season are typically stronger storms. In Japan, typhoon are numbered instead of being given a name like the West does for hurricanes.
Yeah.
As an example, the 7th typhoon of the year would be known as typhoon number 7.
Do they skip 4?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah.
Because 4 is associated with death.
Yeah.
Because
the 7th one might be the 8th one.
Yeah, that's
you really don't want your...
That's a good point.
Gigantic property damage and loss of life storm to be called death.
So, okay, maybe our audience doesn't know this. So there's the superstitious numbers in Japan are 4 and 7 because their names sound similar to death. At some point over the years, they were given other names, but there is still like a superstition associated with the numbers 4 and the number 7. So
I dated a girl named Beth. I understand.
Something to keep in mind is that if a typhoon does hit Japan or the weather service is predicting that it will, It is likely that public transportation will stop running or run less frequently in those areas that are affected by the storm. So you may get stranded if you try taking public transportation during a typhoon. So
maybe Chibi couldn't have got back.
Don't do that. Well,
well, you just got a Kurabara all the way home.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I mean, hopefully it wasn't that bad. But you do see a lot of broken umbrellas in Japan. There's lot of like strong wind and it like breaks it. I mean, one thing to keep in mind too is like umbrellas are like ubiquitous and like you can find them everywhere. You can get them at a 7-Eleven. Any convenience has them and they're usually around 500 yen. So like $5.
Yeah.
So if you are out without an umbrella, you can usually buy one really easily. When I went to Japan in college, besides bringing an umbrella, it was also recommended that I bring a rain jacket and rain pants.
Rain pants?
Yes.
Wow.
And I do not know what I would have done without them. So once a week on Tuesdays, we had a 4-hour course at another university in town that was about a 20-minute bike ride away. I do not know why, but it seemed like it rained every single day. Tuesday. So Tuesday is Kayobi in Japanese and rain is Ame. I started calling Tuesdays Ameyobi because it literally was like rain day. Yobi is day. So anyways, keep in mind that we would have to ride our bikes to the other university and back 20 minutes both ways. So sometimes we would ride there in the rain, try to dry off in class for 4 hours, and then ride back in the rain.
Oh, no.
So the rain gear seriously helped and kept us so much drier than I would have – kept me so much drier than I would have been. I definitely got in the habit of taking, like – a long hot shower as soon as I got back to my dorm room. But I do remember it raining a lot on the weekends when we went out to do like sightseeing and that sort of thing. So It is something that happens quite a bit.
What you need is a hairdryer.
Yeah, right.
Just pull that out.
And just create blow wind. Right, just dry exactly. Off. Yeah, needed to have that with me in my bag. Itadakimasu with Usagi. What did Usagi eat in this episode? So Ami and Mako both had a drink at the cafe when Rei and Minako come to join them. Though it looks like they are all gone, It is possible that Mako had a parfait, as it is the same shape glass or that parfaits usually are served in, or she might have had some kind of like fancy soda drink, like a melon soda or something like that.
Right.
Judging from Ami's glass, I think she either had tea or coffee. Later, a little kid and their mom pass by Chibiusa, and the kid remarks that they are hungry, and their mom asks if they want her to make them some pancakes then, and then the kid says, "How about pudding?" So I want to talk about that for a minute. Actually, it is. So the kid said pudding, which does translate as pudding. However, pudingu is what we in the U.S. think of as pudding. Pudding is a different Japanese dessert, which is a custard dessert with a soft caramel on the top. Other names for this dessert include custard pudding, caramel custard, creme caramel, or flan.
Really?
Yes.
Huh.
And this is very popular in Japan. You will see it a lot of different places. There are several different kinds of pudding. Mushi pudding, which is a custard cooked on a stovetop in a bain-marie or hot water bath, in a skillet or a steamer. Yaki pudding, which is a custard that is cooked in the oven. And pudding, which is custard that is made from using gelatin.
Okay.
So the different kinds are, it's like how it's made that makes them different. And they taste a little bit different texture, too.
Well, she must love this kid, because like pancakes is like, pour it out, fry it, done. But
I know.
The pudding seems like, okay, it's, well, in 4 hours involved. You can have your pudding.
Yeah, villain gauge, we rate a baddie 1 to 5 dark stars, 5 being the most wicked. The droid in this episode is Furaiki. Furaiki's name combines some of the elements that she fights with. The first kanji of her name, Fu, F-U-U, means wind. And the second kanji of her name, Rai, R-A-I, means lightning. The last part of her name, Ki, the kanji that is used is the kanji for demon, spirit, monster, or oni. So her name could be translated as wind and lightning demon.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Rai, like Raiden from Mortal Kombat?
Probably. R-A-I.
That's all
yeah.
I got.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
That's what I got. I mean, I think that, you know, Mortal Kombat is weird because there's just people from everywhere in Mortal Kombat, but I would think of it as a Chinese thing, right? Like you've got Liu Kang and Kung Lao and stuff like that, but then yeah. Raiden is a Japanese thunder god that's actually a Japanese lightning spirit or something in mythology, so...
Yeah.
So what's he doing here?
Yeah. Well, there you go.
Get out of here, Raiden.
It's a mixture, right?
You go to the Japanese Mortal Kombat. Yeah, I guess it's a mixture. I mean, there's like a white guy, you know, a movie star that punches people's heads off.
So. Yes, exactly.
All right.
Yeah. So we got a diverse team of people kicking your butt. So, yeah, exactly. For Furaiki's character design, she has bluish-gray skin, long, wavy, light blue hair, and a gold unicorn horn coming out of the top of her head. Although, because she is a thunderstorm monster, it is probably supposed to be a lightning rod.
Yeah.
Is what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
She also has red lipstick and dramatic red and blue lightning makeup over her eyes, which... I don't know if you got this, but it reminds me of what would become the Grateful Dead symbol, the skull.
It does.
With a circle on its forehead that has red on the left and blue on the right.
Yeah.
And her, it corresponds.
A little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
She's got the right sides. You know, she's got red on the left and blue on the right, so yeah. So that matches. Anyways,
but that's also the positive and the negative.
Yeah, which is probably more what it is.
Red is positive
and blue is negative.
Black is often negative in America. I don't know about Japanese electronics, but
I don't know.
Red is always designated as positive, mm-hmm. and blue is negative. Also on a magnet, red is the north pole of the magnet and blue is the south pole of the magnet. And that's positive and negative. Right. So for a character that deals with electricity and electromagnetism, like it all just fits into her sort of idiom.
Yeah. No, it makes sense. It's cool. Can you tell me, like, the her drumsticks?
Yeah, I can.
What is that? Because, like, it looks
I'm
like something.
I'm looking at that bag of stickers, and I'm thinking, dude, oh, boy, is this worth that?
Oh, boy. Okay.
It is. So,
I can't figure out what
so
it is.
So she has her sticks are drumsticks, because they beat her drum.
Yes, right.
They're also like cattle prods, which a cattle prod is a device that delivers an electric shock, usually to cattle, to get them moving in a certain direction. But the tips of them are different.
Yes.
And one is a 3.5-millimeter headphone jack, and the other is a 1/4-inch stereo jack, which are both used in...
How
I mean, look on the table. They're right here. Like,
well, I look like a headphone equipment. Jack, but like I couldn't... I was like, that's not what it is.
That's what it is.
Okay.
A lot of thought went into this.
Thank you.
A lot of thought went into this character.
Yes. She has a great design. So she's also wearing a short black dress with one strap on her right shoulder, and there are strands coming down over her left shoulder that attach to her Black Moon Clan jewel, which is green. She's also wearing black mid-calf boots, a red and blue wristbands, which again correspond to her makeup and her drumsticks, and a bass drum, which she hits with her drumsticks. Which it's just crazy. And a brown holster on her left leg for her orange hair dryer.
Now, here's the problem. You want to beat the drum with both hands. How do you operate the dryer as well? You know, you came with too many weapons here.
Well, I've seen a picture of her. She holds the drumsticks, and both of them, in one hand, and she pulls out the dryer.
Right, but that's pretty awkward.
Yeah.
And now that we know you can be electrocuted, careful with those cattle prods. You'd be like, oh, I got to blow this guy's away. Okay, hold on. Just put this over here. Oh, careful. Don't let him touch. Okay, and then just pull this out. All right. What setting do we want? Diffuse? No, we got to go the whole way. Hi. I like the fact that her jewel is not in her head. And
yes.
And it also, it's kind of like, it looks like a kind of a stereo knob to me. Like if you were going to like turn that up to 11, you know, like that's, it's a very.
I see what you did there.
It's a very like sort of music rock themed kind of Yoma or droid in this case.
Yeah. Yeah. No, exactly. The hair, the makeup. I totally agree with you. I really like her eye makeup, the drum and the hair dryer. I think she's ferocious and funny. And I think her overall character design, especially knowing the elements that you shared as well, are really great. And she did make Chibiusa freak out and use her power. But to be fair, Chibiusa is a little girl. overall, I'm not totally feeling this one, but I think it has a great design. So I'm going to give it 3 out of 5 dark stars.
Well, I'm going to give it 3 out of 5 as well.
Okay.
We're just not really... Well, that this is not... I was going to make a statement that's not true. we have... zoomed in on some droids.
Yes.
Like the droid who ran the makeup shop.
She was perfect.
Yeah. And so the fact that she just kind of comes in like an old school Yoma, does a thing or two. The girls don't even, I mean, you can say, you know, we rate them by power. She's very powerful because she kept 4 sailors out of the fight. But that was just to maintain this convoluted system of who knows what that you were trying to explain to me before, where only Usagi is going to fight this one.
Yeah, right.
And as soon as Tuxedo Mask shows up, it's kind of just kind of over for her. So
he ruins her drum, and then she's just like she fries herself. That's it.
Yeah, that's when she like pulls out like a you know a little hand keyboard or something.
A keytar.
Yeah. Or like a, yeah, or an electric violin or something.
Ooh, and, that would have been fighting. Good.
But she didn't have that, so I guess she's not that effective. And I like the design. It's a cool design. But ultimately, I think it probably comes down to 3 dark stars for me.
All right.
Plus, I can't say her name.
It's a little bit of a...
Furaiki. Furaiki.
I know. It's a little bit of a tongue twister. I had to listen to it a lot myself. I did want to talk about pets for just a little bit, since she's
you mean featured. Like dogs and cats?
Yeah, I know. Since she's heavily featured in this episode for the first time. Pets, her name is pronounced Petsu in Japanese, is named after the mineral Petsite. The PETZITE. It forms in isometric crystals and is usually associated with rare tellurium and gold minerals, often with silver, mercury, and copper.
I feel like there's another mineral that we talked about earlier that was like rare but not precious and sort of forms in the presence of other, you know, more rarefied elements.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like you could, if you find a gold deposit, you could expect to find
yes.
a lot of petzite with it.
Yes.
But it ain't the real thing.
Right.
Interesting.
Right. Yeah, it is. That's a good point. The mineral's name comes from the chemist W. Petz, who it's his last name, who was the first person to examine and analyze it. It was first discovered in Romania in 1845.
by Mr. Petz.
Yes. As far as I can tell, with Petz, fighting outfit, it definitely looks like it fits with the other couture looks of the 1990s. It is, as far as I can tell, the only Ayakashi sisters fighting outfit that was not directly inspired by a specific couture look.
Uh-huh.
However, if you look at other Mugler designs, he definitely designed dresses that had... especially the black feathers on the shoulders.
Yeah.
And, you know, like a similar design around the bodice as well.
Yeah.
And I think maybe Cal deserves another. I think it's double sticker because he helped me find some other Moogler stuff because he's like.
Cal has seen the Google George Michael guru. Video Too Funky. And so therefore he isn't a fashion expert.
Well, you're like a Google guru, and I'm like.
Well, it's Google, but it is kind of knowing looks. You know, I'm not going to put myself out there as being a fashion expert,
right?
But I have seen the George Michael video "Too Funky" that was directed by Thierry Mugler and featured all of his looks, and that's his style. His style is that sort of because this was popular in the '90s. Looking back to like the '50s and like.
Sure.
And the '40s in some way, and classic sort of looks. But then he would stick cyberpunk bits and bobs on it, and he would like do like he's got a girl that's got like a bodice that's a motorcycle, so it's got like handlebars and mirrors on it and stuff like that. And he would do things like that. And so just seeing I don't think the leggings and I don't think the belt, the big buckle belt was real was a real couture kind of look.
No,
but just the short dress, the feathers, and then the sort of jeweled cups.
Yeah, the long gloves too. I think he liked gloves.
Yeah. Oh, he loved gloves.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was that's that sort of classic sort of look.
I'm looking at a picture of her now. I do like her outfit. The belt that kind of is like to the side. It looks like a pirate belt. I don't know why. It's just black and has a gold buckle, but because it's like on its side, I'm like, oh, Petz is a pirate.
Okay, well, if this is gonna happen, then we've got a Rei Hino sticker.
Very nice. Rei Hino
as Sailor Mars.
Yes. Is she giving a peace sign?
She's well the you know, whatever they call it over there.
Yeah, yeah.
Two.
No.
I saw this in the original English dub of Evangelion.
Yeah.
There's a scene where Shinji is experiencing a fantasy of living in a because he's like, you know, boy, I can't explain Evangelion. We don't have that kind of time. But he's basically like, you know, he kind of asks himself, like, well, what do you want? Do you want to live in a perfect world? And so they sort of, there's a 2-minute stretch where they recast the entire show as like, a fun school anime.
Okay,
like,
hey. Sure, right.
And so the teacher comes in like, oh my God, Misato is coming. She's the teacher. Oh, she's so cool. And she comes out of her sports car and she's like, what's up? And she goes like, yeah, and gives him the peace sign. And they're like, yeah, two.
What?
It's like, wait, what? I don't.
Why don't in the dub? That's so weird.
Yeah.
That's weird. I did want to mention, Furaiki is the first Black Moon Clan droid who was not deployed to help take over a crystal point.
Yeah. So. This is the take a break, kill the rabbit.
Yeah, exactly. So now we are up to where we rate the episode. I like that we learn a little bit more of Chibiusa's story, but I feel like we were teased with learning even more from, like, the title and everything. So I'm a little let down by that. I don't really like that Mako seems kind of pushy with Chibiusa, but I like that Tuxedo Mask is, she's like holding on to her arm.
Yeah, just grabs her by the fuku lapels.
She's a little child. Just
pushes her up against the wall.
Yeah, what the heck? But I like that Tuxedo Mask is really on her side and ready to support her. It just kind of sucks that, like, I want them all to be on, like, the same page, and they're clearly not.
Yeah.
And so I don't like that. So I feel like this episode was kind of a tease and didn't really move the story forward as much as I would like. And I don't feel like a whole lot really happened. So I'm going to give it 2 out of 5 roses.
2 out of 5. Mm-hmm. I struggled with this because this is, I think, I don't want to say padding episode, but it is a marking time episode in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that, sure, you wrote yourself into a corner because there's only 5 points on a star, so we can't just blow through that, and so we're gonna have to kill time other ways. And you know, it makes sense that they would try to go after Chibiusa to get the crystal or get her or whatever.
Right.
But yeah, Sailor Moon does a couple different kind of like wasting time episodes. There's the it just has nothing to do with the world of Sailor Moon at all. And then there's ones where they pack it with like a lot of like, and when I say dumb, I mean hilariously funny jokes.
Yes.
But if the girls would just get their act together, this would be over in like 3 minutes.
Right.
And then they do like the real fun explorations, like the Rhett Butler episode.
Oh my gosh, I love the Rhett Butler
where episode. You just, you know, we're probably trying to kill time and you accidentally created the best episode of Sailor Moon.
Yeah, right.
And this is kind of half the good parts of that and half the bad parts of that.
Yeah.
Because it was an interesting Yoma. Clearly, they are chomping at the bit to introduce us to all the Ayakashi sisters because they just boom, boom. Now we know all the Ayakashi sisters.
Yes.
They didn't space that out at all.
No.
And at the same time, and there's interesting ideas like, okay, what's going on with the key? And it introduces this complication where they don't have gravity or something. But yeah, it's such a tease and you get nothing. Like, we know that she's from somewhere else. And we assume that she, you know, was sent here. She's got a picture of Sarah Connor and a dog and a Jeep. Like,
I don't know.
But we don't.
She's traveled in time. Has she come from the future or the past?
We don't.
Or where?
Well, I mean, we get nothing on that. And the last time they did, you know, mysterious voice talking behind a screen, it was just Artemis, who I will mention is not seen in this episode.
You're right.
So the next time she hits Luna P's little nose and the screen comes on, and Artemis is reading a paper on the litter box. He's like,
oh my goodness, no!
Jimmy, you must find the crystal.
I look like a pixelated person now, somehow.
Is that cat taking a dump? So, you know, it just, I mean, I can't say that I don't like it, but it's definitely, you know, just delivering one unit of Sailor Moon.
Right.
And that earns 3 out of 5 stars.
Okay. All right, you're more generous with it than I was, so that's something. My English title is Chibiusa's Loneliness, Desire for Home.
Desire for Home. Mm-hmm. What? Goodbye, Gravity!
Yeah, right. Well, that would have been better.
Mine, now that I know that there's was a ripoff, then I don't feel bad about this. Thunderstruck.
Okay.
Thunderstruck! Right?
I don't get it.
Thunderstruck. Just being thunderstruck.
Well, yeah. Okay. I was just like, okay, there's an awesome song that says
there is.
Okay.
It's an AC/DC song. And it's got a big bass drum in it. Boom, boom, boom. That's definitely what they're referencing.
Okay. All right. That's
I'll play it right here. See?
All right.
I mean, you didn't hear it. But.
Well, I could have pretended. Yes.
And
I
then,
mean, it sounds amazing.
If we, this is a weird world that we live in. And then if the standards and practices people take an early lunch, Storm's a pooing.
Oh, gross.
Artemis is a pooing.
No, too much poo. Next episode, we are talking about episode number 65. Koi no ronso, Minako to Makoto ga Tairitsu in Japanese. Dispute over love, Minako and Makoto's conflict, the English translation, and the English title, A Charmed Life.
Wow, that's hard to draw any conclusions from. Unless
Minako and Makoto will be involved somehow.
Alan takes a trip to Tokyo, and then Makoto's like, he reminds me. And Minako's like, don't.
Oh my gosh, that would be so good. I totally watch that.
I'd like to see people sign up for our Patreon.
That would be awesome.
If they want to.
Yes.
At patreon.com/sailornoob.
Please do.
Where you can get access to our other podcast, yes. Animedification. No!
Animedification!
Yeah, that's it. Take a sticker back. Where we talk about the first episodes of a random amount of animes. So yes. Many animes, a huge list of animes that we're just plowing our way through.
Yes.
And learning, laughing and learning.
All the time.
And yeah, you can join the crew at patreon.com/sailornoob. And if that's too rich for your blood, why not give us a coffee?
Yeah.
There's a link in our show notes to our coffee page. And if you're thinking, these guys are pretty good. You can go to that site and drop something in the tip jar.
That's right.
We'll have a coffee on you.
Yes.
Not on you.
No.
Spill the coffee on you. Not like that.
We're not going to do an Usagi. We're not going to spill the coffee on you. Although I am a little bit of a klutz and a crybaby. So, you know.
Well, that's about it.
Yeah. That's about it. Well, that's our show for this week, and the name of the moon will be punishing you next week with another episode of Sailor Noob.
Thunderstruck!